Talks is a weekly podcast featuring federal program staff from the Georgia Department of Education and Georgia's public schools. For many individuals, the purpose of federally funded programs is unknown. Through its Fed Talk series, the Georgia Department of Education is sharing more information on the ways Georgians are leveraging federal funds to serve Georgia students and Georgia schools. Welcome to Fed Talks.
All right, well, welcome back, everybody. This is the second podcast in our series on Georgia systems of continuous improvement and the school improvement process, really. As far as our federal programs here at the Department of Education. So once again, I'm Craig Gears, and joining me today is my colleague, John White.
Hey, everybody, John White.
And Zell Smith.
Zelphine Smith Dixon, you're right.
Okay. And again, with us in the room, we have our colleagues from the School Improvement Division, so I'll allow them to introduce themselves. Go ahead.
Patty Brooks.
Sam Taylor.
And Faya Powell.
All right, well, let's get back into the conversation. And Zell, I'm going to tap you for the first question.
Thank you. So I'm excited about starting. I have a great question. Tell us about what makes the use of the systems framework so compelling for organizing districts and schools for improvement.
Well, I think we think that it gives us a common language to operate from. It allows us to ensure that our work is intentional and strategic. It removes subjectivity to the work that we do, but it allows us to analyze in a way that's appropriate at the district level, school level, teacher level, student level, in a way that will help to close gaps.
I think one additional thing, it allows us to make sure that those five systems keep a continuous focus on the whole child.
And so everything I think we've heard from the first podcast is very compelling that this is really good work. Is it required of districts or just suggested?
I think it is our expectation that districts and schools are going to use Georgia's continuous system of improvement. And so we want this to be the way in which we approach our work, irregardless of what level the person sits. It's evidence-based. We know that Georgia is using it. We know that Florida has used it. We know Chicago, University of Chicago has used it. We know that ADI has used it. Mm-hmm. And so with that being said, we know that this works and that this is a good practice. And I just don't see a district or school saying, if it's evidence-based, that we wouldn't be interested in doing something that's already proven to help our teachers and our principals and our students to become better.
And, you know, just to add on, to put a little more weight behind it, even still, those systems and structures were based on a meta-analysis of effective school practice. So truly, when we talk about evidence-based, these systems and structures really are.
Mm-hmm. So in layman's terms, what's that mean? It works.
That means it works.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly. If indeed we are operating as a school or a district at the highest level across the systems within these structures, we ought to be knocking it out of the ballpark.
Very good.
Right. That brings up a good point, because Craig just kind of clarified what evidence-based is in a nutshell. But you know, when we think about evidence-based, we're thinking about that the strategy or whatever we're using is shown to work, and then not just the teacher saying it's working,
right,
but that there is some evidence, some empirical evidence, meaning like some researcher at a college did a study on it, and if they follow an intervention or something a certain way, then it's proven to work. That's evidence-based. So here's my question. What's the evidence base for the systems framework that we do? Was there a study done on it? Where was it from? Was it from a college or was it from an independent group? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I think Dr. Rooks indicated earlier that there was a meta-analysis done on the framework. And through that meta-analysis, I think that they identified five effective areas where research and evidence, because there's a difference, has shown that these five essential systems are important to increase student achievement.
So let's walk through one.
Yeah, that's
great. In the first podcast, I think you were in a school, all of our stakeholders mm-hmm. together, and we've identified that there's an issue with math.
Okay.
Kids just aren't achieving. So how does this framework work in that?
Okay. You want to go, Pat?
Well,
Dr. Brooks?
Sure. Just to talk a little bit about that. So as we said, we have five systems. As a district or a school goes through the comprehensive needs assessment, they look through the lens of the structures within each of those systems. Mm-hmm. So math may be an issue. Our data may show us that we have low math scores in a particular area. But truly, what is the issue at hand? So we're going to look very critically and carefully, are we not, to see, do we have a curriculum that's guaranteed for all, that's viable, that's aligned to our state standards? If we do, well, that may not be the issue, but perhaps our strategies within the classroom, we might need to look at those instead, and so forth, so on. So we go through the lens of coherent instruction, but we go beyond that. We'd look carefully to see family and community engagement. Are we engaging our parents in terms of helping them to see what the expectations are for their students? Oh, and by the way, how maybe they can provide support mm-hmm. for their students as well. We'll look at professional capacity to ensure that our teachers have a deep understanding of the strategies that will impact math at a very high level. We'll look to see, first of all, whether or not that's an issue, and if it is, then we'll provide the support necessary. Effective leadership mm-hmm. plays a key role in terms of ensuring that the schedule, that the structures are there, that the resources mm-hmm. are there for the teachers and students that are needed. So all of that is to say, we're going to look through those various systems to ensure that, number one, we've identified the need, the root cause of the need, and then secondly, that we're addressing those needs wherever those needs may be, system by system.
So it's leaving no stone unturned.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and I think in the media we hear a lot about reading, for example. That's a lot of parents know about that, and I think a lot of schools are working on reading. So could we dig into that for a second real quick
sure.
through those systems? And let's pretend that we're a school real quick and we identified that our third grade reading scores, we have gaps between two groups, all right, perhaps English learners and non-English learners. And you guys are the school, you three are the school, and you're sitting around looking at the table, looking at that data, and you're trying to decide what the actual need is. Can you talk us through, just briefly, what you might talk about with each of those systems related to that reading gap?
So I think that when we look at those systems, we would work to identify our needs. So if I look at coherent instruction, is it the instructional strategy? Is there a gap in understanding how to actually teach reading that's creating the deficit to determine my next step for planning my implementation? Or am I going to look through professional learning capacity? Is it professional development in an ongoing basis that needs to occur? Do I look at it from family and community engagement and decipher that there's a gap in grades K through 3 and I need parents on board and understanding of some strategies, so I'd use some mechanisms through that funnel? So that would be, to me, how you would approach it through the systems. And once you identify that, you want to use the improvement cycle to carry it out. And so you would move through those five steps that we spoke of in our previous podcast to determine, how well am I implementing it? What do I need to consider differently? How am I examining it? And then I start over. Am I improving and closing gaps in reading, or do I still have a problem and I'm able to address it before it's too late?
What are some of the things that you've seen? I know you guys have been working with a lot of schools. Can you think of a couple of strategies that you've seen that have been working in schools that you might want to share to help bring some more context to what Faya just went through?
Yes, so let's just take the supportive learning environment. And so in that supporting learning environment, that's where you can provide some additional help or assistance for those identified students. That could be through an after-school program. It could be through a different push-in, pull-out, which means that you push-in means that you've added another teacher in the classroom, or pull-out means that you're just working directly with those students. So there are many different strategies that you can do, and then as terms of effective leader in that, he or she would provide those resources or structure the schedule around those strategies to make that happen.
And to carry, to tag to what you were saying, Dr. Taylor, I think that if a school or a district, for example, chose professional learning, as I heard mm-hmm. you speak to, if I've identified that my area, I'm going back to your reading example, is reading strategies, and we put those in place, then how do I monitor that with fidelity? How do I go and collect data to measure where it is at the onset when we've identified the gap? How do I look at the implementation and collect that data, examine what it's saying to mm-hmm. determine additional next steps? How long do I monitor it? At what point do I come back to make informed decisions about the results that are being yielded? And then when I start over again, am I starting in the same place, or am I adding to it? Or have we realized that that wasn't the problem? There was, mm-hmm. it can be a self-inflicted barrier that sometimes causes things to not be implemented with the level of fidelity to yield the results that you're looking for. But I think that some of those things are the power behind using the school improvement process, because it allows you to remain focused. It allows you and encourages you to operate in a very strategic manner so that we don't lose gaps of children, but that we are moving all districts, all schools, all children.
And, you know, just to piggyback on what Dr. Paul said, it's been exciting to see how teachers have embraced the systems of continuous improvement in some of our schools, student by student. So they will literally look at a student and identify that student's needs, think about interventions specific to meet the student's needs, formulate that plan for the student, and it could be with that teacher singularly or with a group of teachers working with the students, implement the plan, and ongoing provide that progress monitoring themselves with the use of other students, administrators, to ensure that the students' needs are being met. Likewise, they'll look at each system to say, how could I engage a particular student's parents in further supporting? Maybe I need to look at bringing in extra support from other staff members in order to better meet the student's needs. So it really is a comprehensive look in macrocosm at the school level, at the classroom level, and very much in microcosm, student by student.
So what would happen if during the process, and they're looking at how the kids are doing, that the school realizes that, oh, this isn't working, and it's only November? So what happens there?
Well, I think schools have to be intentional. If you're implementing, the first question I would ask is, are we implementing with a level of fidelity? So whatever it is that we agreed to implement, is that what is actually occurring? And then as we continue to monitor, if it's not moving the needle, is it a group of children? Is it a particular teacher's classroom? Is it particular schools and particular portions of the district? Further analysis based on the data that you're collecting will help guide next steps.
So you guys, if you were visiting a school and you saw they did a shift in January, they changed how they were doing something, would you be upset with that?
No, because data informs us. And so there's no one size fits all. You have to meet the need where it is and plan and adjust accordingly. And I think that that's oftentimes where we fail in education, is that because we signed on, we don't think that there's room for variation or there's an opportunity before the school year closes to make adjustments. But data will inform us where that needs to occur. And I think that's why when you're intentional with the school improvement process, it means just that you're going to constantly improve. You're going to constantly evolve.
Thank you all very much for joining the conversation today, and we look forward to continuing the conversation in the next podcast.